This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Before the world got its first glimpse of the Land of Oz, its creator, L. Frank Baum, was already a storyteller. First performing as an actor, he then created compelling marketing materials for his father's oil enterprise, and ultimately waxed poetic to his own children at home, as well as the children of others, through his wondrous retail operation on the American frontier. Baum's life was one of contradictions, though. Through his wife's mother, he became familiar with the cause of women's suffrage and was an ardent supporter of that effort, particularly through the newspaper he owned in South Dakota. But when that territory became a state amid ongoing conflicts with Native Americans, his words took a racist and hateful turn. L. Frank Baum is the focus of the latest installment of the PBS anthology series American Experience. It's called American Oz. I spoke earlier with the filmmakers. Here's our pre-recorded interview. Joining us now are the writers, directors, and producers of the latest installment of American Experience. It's called American Oz. It tells the life story of author L. Frank Baum, famous for The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. They are Tracy Heather Strain. Tracy, welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you.
And Randall McLowry. Randall, welcome to you as well.
Hello, thank you for having us.
So this is a really cool installment. I learned a lot about this man that I didn't know before. Of course, everyone knows The Wizard of Oz. I think we know less about the man who gave us this iconic American story. That will change for everyone who watches this edition of American Experience tonight on PBS stations. I have to say, this anthology series is called American Experience, but I don't know that I've seen an installment that so wholly encompasses the American experience of the period from which it is. I mean, you have basically like a riches to almost rags back to riches story. You have racism. You have women's rights. You have this shift from the agrarian economy in America to the industrial age. Am I right in that assessment, Tracy?
Well, you know, I don't always get to see them all, but yes, it was such a great sweep of history. And it was exciting to see how we could connect U.S. history with L. Frank Baum's story. It was a really great project.
Randall, this is a period of American history where we do make that shift from the agrarian economy to more of the industrial age. And L. Frank Baum experiences all of that living in big cities, living in the plains. Talk a little bit about how you were able to capture those elements of his story in the backdrop of the American story.
Well, I think that what's important to understand is that Frank Baum, obviously, he was living at a time that were was a very transformative time. And there were a lot of changes happening in the country. And he was somebody who had the ability to travel and to pursue his dreams. And you know, he was a very creative person, and that was sort of something that really sort of drove his own desires and that idea to create and to and let his imagination to lead himself and to follow his path. And so I think in terms of, you know, it was the fact that he did have that opportunity, but he traveled to places that were very iconic in that way, in terms of having the opportunity to travel out to the Great Plains and to be part of the mass of people that were moving out there for a new life, a new adventure, what he called a place to be somebody. That's what he viewed his time out in Aberdeen. It didn't turn out to be a great success in many ways, but he was a person who was full of optimism and hope, and he sort of fulfilled America in that way too. He had that sense of optimism and sense of reinvention. And so I think in that regard, he was very of his time. And, you know, he was very much a part of also that the transition. He wasn't a farmer, but he did witness the farming communities out there. And, you know, he grew up on an estate outside of Syracuse. And so it was a bucolic existence. And he, you know, was familiar with the farm life, but he wasn't necessarily somebody who was kind of deep into that as a farmer. But he was somebody who was witness to a lot of these things. And then obviously in Chicago, he was witness to great transformations in an urban scale, with Chicago becoming this booming place of both immigration, but also the rise in manufacturing and technology. So he was sort of situated at a time and a place where he was able to witness things, and he was able to take that and turn it into something that was a story that people could appreciate and sort of see themselves in.
You mentioned Aberdeen. That is a town in South Dakota where Frank Baum and family set up shop, literally set up a shop, and then he worked in the newspaper industry. This is a two-hour installment of American Experience, and we really don't even get to know the Wizard of Oz, the Land of Oz, very intimately until the second hour. That's how much of a backstory there is worth exploring with this man. And Tracy, this is someone who had a lot of different skills. He was an actor. He worked with his father in the oil business, where he crafted some very clever advertising campaigns. He owned a newspaper. He owned a retail shop. He's partly responsible, I suppose, for the importance of window displays in retail shops across the world. He created an industrial magazine devoted to that practice. Talk a little bit about that background and how versatile his skills were even before he put pen to paper to create some of these fictional characters we all know so well.
Sure. One of the areas that is one of our favorites is the fact that he actually raised fancy chickens and seemed to, and for a brief time made a business out of that as well. He seemed to be a natural show person. And the store that he had in Aberdeen, the store that he thought it was going to, you know, be make his mark in the world was called Baum's Bazaar. And it sounds like it was just such an exciting place. Imagine being a farmer and suddenly coming into a store that's just full of this and that from different countries, chocolates and toys and umbrellas and vases and just anything that seemed fanciful and exciting. Frank Baum was very interested in having people be entertained and to be feel special. And he loved to use his shop as a place to tell stories to children. We know that he, we suspect that like everybody else, when he was in Chicago, he went to the World's Fair and was inspired by what he saw there. There's a lot that we say about Frank Baum, but we can't specifically say, because during our research, we realized that he didn't quite tell us exactly what he was thinking and what his influences are, but you can see, based on where he was and what was going on, that something like the Chicago World's Fair was a huge influence on his life. In fact, there's this idea that the Wizard of Menlo Park, is in part an inspiration for the Wizard of Oz, although we can't say that for sure, and we don't in the film.
At Baum's Bazaar, the film explains that children in particular loved going there. He was a storyteller, but they also enjoyed looking at the wonderful toys that he would bring in. He had a great relationship with children, it appears, particularly his own, always spending time with them when he could and telling his stories that would ultimately inspire him to write them down. He also had a very good relationship with his own father, it appears. Early in his life, when he was pursuing a career on stage, his father was supportive of that. When he entered the business world, his father brought him on without hesitation. Randall, how important was that familial relationship, did you discover, in creating the man we know as L. Frank Baum?
Frank Baum's father was very instrumental for Frank Baum's success. I mean, Frank was did grow up. You know, his father made quite a bit of money. He was early into the oil fields in Pennsylvania, New York, when that oil boom happened just after the Civil War, around the time of the Civil War. And so Frank was coddled in a certain way. He lived a comforted life in the estate called Roselawn, which he sort of uses as bucolic space in his life, where he kind of had space for his imagination to run free and to sort of build that as sort of kind of a muscle in some respects in his own life. And his father was very accommodating and really did give him, you know, the opportunities that he wanted to pursue. And that did include going into acting at a time where that might not have been, you know, what his father perhaps thought was the ideal profession for him. But, you know, so he was really kind of the lifeline for Frank Baum. I mean, the ability for him to raise the fancy fowl they did was the fact that his father, you know, supported him with that, and actually he gave money to start building that business himself. And but his father was also somebody who did try so many different things in his own career. So I think Frank Baum kind of followed in his father's footsteps in many ways, in an entrepreneurial way. I think they took it, they approached their careers from a very different point of view. But he really kind of, I think, had that model for himself in terms of his own directions that he took. And yes, family was very important for Frank Baum. And certainly one of the struggles he had throughout his life was being able to turn these ideas that he had for his careers into things that would support his family. And they often were failures. And so his acting gig lasted for a little while, had some success, but you know, it didn't turn out to be something that was going to be a longstanding profession for him, although he continued to stay connected to the theater. You know, his work as a store owner fell when a drought hit the area and people weren't going to go out and buy the toys and the luxury novelties that he was offering up to them. And so that was a real struggle for him. That was to sort of be able to make those two sides, you know, to be the provider and to be the sustainer, but also to sort of follow his passions for what he wanted to do. And that came together finally later in life when he started, you know, writing down the stories he was telling to his children and starting to get them published.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking today about the latest installment of the PBS anthology series American Experience. It's called American Oz. It tells the story of author L. Frank Baum, most famous for The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. It premieres tonight at 9 o'clock on PBS stations. We're joined by the writers, directors, and producers of this film, Tracy Heather Strain and Randall McLowry. Tracy, there was another parental figure who featured intimately and prominently in Frank Baum's life, and that's his mother-in-law, a famed American suffragist. Tell us about her and this relationship and the impact it had on him as a man and creator.
Matilda Jocelyn Gage was L. Frank Baum's mother-in-law, and she was a noted feminist, as you've mentioned, and her daughter, Maud, went to Cornell University as an early co-ed. So education was really important to Gage, but she was also interested in supporting her son-in-law. And she was instrumental in him becoming what we might consider today a feminist. He was very interested in supporting the right for women in South Dakota to vote. He put a lot of time and energy into it. Unfortunately, it did not pass, and it just was disappointing to Baum, but he felt like women should be treated on equal footing as men in the society. He also saw his mother-in-law as a figure who was misunderstood in society, and it sort of suggested that she was often called a witch, and it suggested that this notion of a good witch is something that Baum created as a sort of homage to his late mother-in-law, Matilda Jocelyn Gage. And so when you read The Wizard of Oz or look at the film version, you should always think that Frank was trying to honor love so dearly and that was so supportive of him. In fact, she's the one who told him or suggested to him that he should publish his stories because she thought that they would be successful.
And not only is that featured in his storytelling, that type of allegory, but also the time spent on the plains. We see Dorothy Gale and her Aunt Em and Uncle Henry struggling in Kansas, where he located the story. We see the presentation of people who are different to one another. We see interesting and different interpretations of gender roles and the way male characters behave in the stories he tells. But in spite of these progressive views he took on feminism and women's suffrage, Randall, he had some pretty strong racist views, particularly against Native Americans and then later on towards African Americans as well, right?
Frank Baum was a man of his time, and he did carry with him ideas about people that many people, you know, many white people carried at that time. And Frank Baum, being out in Aberdeen, was moving into an area that was a land that was not empty. It was a land that was the homeland of Lakota Sioux, and it was a time of. This was also, you know, a time of great transformation that's going on, and the struggles and the consolidating of Native Americans onto reservations, and there was friction that was going on between the white settlers and the Native Americans, but it was leading up to basically there was a scare that occurred that was related to what they called the Ghost Dance, and this was an effort. It was a movement, a religious movement within the Native American community, not just Lakota, of a resurgence, and it was seen, and it was a way to sort of rejuvenate, and it was within the Native Americans, but it was seen by the whites as a threatening expression, and it led to concerns about attacks and so on the white communities, which were built up by the press. It was a lot of false news that was being built up, and so there was a climate of concern. And Frank Baum was out there. Basically, his livelihood was on the success of Aberdeen, and Aberdeen, you know, required having settlers wanting to come out there and to move in and to be people that would go to his store or to read his newspaper. And, you know, there came in the short of it, but Sitting Bull, who was a famed Lakota leader, was killed in sort of the rising tension that was going on related to the Ghost Dance. And Frank Baum wrote some very some editorials that basically call for the extermination of Native Americans. And what he wrote is very hurtful. It is something that was not untypical of how white Americans would have seen Native Americans as at that time. And he was part of that thought process. And he was basically channeling, you know, as one of our interviewees says, this belief within America and the hierarchy of how white Americans viewed others in society. And that's part of who he was. And it's part of, you know, it was not something that became, didn't become known specifically at the time. It wasn't something that was trumpeted around in other papers. So it was a very local response that he made, but it was, it was showing how Americans saw Native Americans at that time. And there really wasn't much sympathy for them. And that is reflected in his words. And it's a very, you know, this defining statement of the American experience and of this intense racial animosity. And similarly, you know, in his works later, when he started writing children's books, you know, he included racial stereotypes and looking at, you know, while in his books like The Wonderful Wizard of Oz did show, you know, this sort of sense of coming and meeting new diverse peoples, it was also a way to sort of looking at difference. And at times it was looking at difference and making it a hierarchical distinction. And so, you know, and that's part of American popular culture. And he was just part of that. I mean, it was certainly at the time, you know, in 1900 when The Wizard of Oz was published, and then in that those early decades of the 20th century, as things like motion pictures become popular, America was really exporting the popular culture that's becoming, you know, prevalent. And that is very much a part of it. And so it's a defining part of America. And it's also, you know, it's a defining part of who Frank Baum was. And that doesn't take away from, you know, what one can take from the stories that he did give. And certainly The Wizard of Oz is an iconic story of America. And it provides inspiration for thousands and millions of readers that have read it over the years. So, but it's this duality and this dichotomy that exists in America and it still exists.
In our last 30 seconds together, Tracy, people know The Wizard of Oz, certainly, and the second half of the film explores that creation and that success. But what do you think viewers of this film will take away as perhaps the most surprising thing or most interesting thing they'll learn about the man who created it?
I think that Frank Baum's complexity is the most surprising thing. I think that you hit the nail on the head in your open, that he was really a person who was a part of the current of the society during his lifetime. And I think that people will have a richer viewing of The Wonderful Wizard of the Wizard of Oz and richer readings of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. I think overall his story is just quite interesting and surprising.
Tracy Heather Strain and Randall McLowry are the writers, directors, and producers of the latest installment of the PBS anthology series American Experience. It's called American Oz. It explores the life and times of author L. Frank Baum of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz fame. Tracy, Randall, congratulations on the film, which premieres tonight on PBS stations at 9 o'clock. Thanks for the time you gave us, and we hope to talk to you about your next project when that comes up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow. It's been 17 years since the cicadas of Brood 10 graced us with their presence, but their time is near. They'll be buzzing and busting out of the ground in the coming days and sticking around for 6 weeks. So what do you want to know about them? Local expert Dr. Gene Kritzky is with us to talk all about it tomorrow at noon on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.